Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew, and tonight I'd like to welcome ghostwriter, lecturer, and teacher, researching topics ranging from MKUltra and ritual abuse to invasive electromagnetic weapons, chemtrails and HAARP, Alana Freeland. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. And the topics you cover, they cause division even within our community because there's so much disinformation. But the information is so critical and people need to hear this. But before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background and what got you started doing your research.
Right. Oh boy, that seems like so long ago. But I'm a 60s person, and I've been relatively politically awake for many, many years. I used to write for my college papers back in the 60s. I was always covering events, which then were almost as dramatic as the events going on today. Certainly I'm thinking of the torching of Notre Dame. When I got involved in this movement, though, the anti-geoengineering, anti-chemtrails, whatever you want to call it, movement, I had been researching for over two decades into everything you can possibly imagine about American culture that had happened since Kennedy's assassination, including a retrospective on World War II, back to World War I, the European powers. And so I had quite a backlog when I chanced to come across these issues along with all the other issues. I remember I had a file on chemtrails, and then I had a file on HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska, that Nick Begich and Gene Manning had written a book about, Angels Don't Play This HAARP, in 1995. So I had an extensive coverage of what had happened to America since the end of World War II, since the bomb, since JFK was shot down like a dog in Dallas, and on TV, no less. And so when I met Clifford Carnicom in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I was just back from England, and I'd gone back to Santa Fe, where I had actually gone to grad school at St. John's College, and I chanced to meet Clifford. And Clifford, for those who don't know, is certainly the first scientist who began to notice over northern New Mexico the strange trails coming out of jets in that once beautiful azure blue sky that northern New Mexico has. He was observing it, and he knew that they were not contrails. Contrails are condensation trails, and there was no way that the trails he was seeing were water vapor, ice. No, they were chemical. So he began collecting precipitation, snow, dew, rain, and scraping whatever was coming in off of his HEPA filter on his trailer. And he began analyzing it. And I chanced to meet him probably, I'd say, 7, 8, 9 years after he'd started this. And he had already discovered the fibers that were coming down from whatever was in the jets, however the distribution system was working. These fibers are known now as Morgellons. He was able to analyze those with various solvents and certainly looked at a lot of the tiny parts of this fiber and had figured out a test that he could use to see if indeed it was more than just a few people who had it in them. So he began testing people. I was one of them, with the what's called the red wine test. And we would clean our mouths really well and then slosh around a mouthful of red wine and then spit it into a clean jar and take a look. And what we found were fibers moving about with their own mobility. It was pretty shocking. And then the next part of this test was blood. So looking at my blood on a slide under his, I think it was a 300 power microscope then, I watched as, I had a biology background in undergrad, so I knew what erythrocytes are supposed to look like, your red blood cells, and there mine were, some of them being attacked by something sticking its head straight into the cell and basically sucking all the iron out until the cell was almost flat. I still remember the horror with which I watched this because I understood immediately that if you're distributing something in the atmosphere by jet planes, and we didn't know about the rockets then as being yet another delivery system, and we didn't have the drones then that we have now, which is another delivery system. You realize, my God, this is an assault. This is an attack. The military is using commercial jets along with military jets to deliver what we don't know. We don't know what they are. This is only one of the things that Clifford had discovered. There are also the chemicals used in the fuel. There's supplementary systems that are now I realize many years later, right, 8 or 9 years later, that they use these things, they use these chemicals for various areas because we all have a different geomagnetic signature. So like what I mean is, I don't know, where do you live, Chris?
I live in South Louisiana.
All right. So, you're down by Sean Gautreau. Do you know Sean?
No, I sure don't.
Oh, you'd like to. Yeah, he's very much in this movement, and he's a very interesting guy in New Orleans.
Oh, very
anyway,
funny.
The signature, the geomagnetic signature of South Louisiana is very different from the geomagnetic signature of the Pacific Northwest, where I am, right?
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
That's why you have different weather, you have different terrain, you have different trees, you have different everything,
yeah.
Right? So they've got it all figured out. But at that time, I didn't know that. But I did get right away that we are all at the mercy of what is in our atmosphere. Now, we knew that for a long time in the pollution that we've had to deal with industrialization and post-industrialization. So we know about pollution, but this is not just something that comes with smokestacks and fire and various ways that we have to make the chemicals that our culture, our civilization is basically dependent upon. This was not just fallout. This was intentional. This had to be intentional. And that was the real shocker. I mean, I already knew a lot of secrets about the government. But this was on a new level for me. So that was the beginning for me. And then when I got back to the Pacific Northwest, after 5 years down there, I came back up here. And I was contacted by a publisher, Adam Parfrey, at Farrell House, for whom I had done some work when I was living in England. I'd done some editing for him. And he asked me if I thought I could write a book on chemtrails. So I agreed, and I began the research of reading the books that had already been written. There were not that many. Jerry Smith had written two books, one on HAARP, one on weather warfare. Then Nick Begich's book, and I can't remember his name right now, but another couple of guys who had written books. And then I turned to the internet and started looking for military documents. And I was very surprised, happily so, that just about everything I might need was in open source. I'm sure there were things I couldn't access, of course, but I found a lot. And so I wrote the first book that came out in 2014 called Chemtrails, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. Then I was on Coast to Coast, and a lot of people came forward, one of whom was a very important guy, Billy Hayes. He had been a tower erector for over 240 installations for the U.S. military and CIA around the world. And he was very skilled in electromagnetics, and he was so happy that I had written the book. It was like, you know, he felt like it was what he would have said. But he began to guide me in ways to show me the next phase. That was just the beginning, where I was sort of going through what we already knew, really, about the jet fuel, about contrail versus chemtrail, about how the term chemtrail had come from the U.S. Air Force Academy, and how Raytheon had owned all the patents for the HAARP instrument, what the HAARP instrument was, what the HAARP experiments were. And at that time, you may remember, there was a lot going on around hurricanes and earthquakes in those years. So I break down in that first book some of those operations, because they were indeed geoengineered operations. That would include the Katrina, Sandy, the Haiti horror, what happened in Indonesia. There were many because they were basically working with an instrument that through the ionospheric heaters like HAARP, in order to be able to control the weather. And so there was a lot of experimentation, a lot of destruction, a lot of people's lives were completely smeared. A lot of people lost their homes, never went back to them. So obviously, operations that have been going on in America for many years, certainly since the Cold War and before, using Americans for experimentation, and that's not new. What was new was the scale on which this was being done. And as I began to learn through the years, what was also new were the many levels upon which experimentation was going on. All the way from, yes, weather and how you control weather to atmospheric pressures, the jet stream, the electrojet, the troposphere, the ionosphere, the magnetosphere. I mean, the scale was space age scale. It wasn't just down here, sort of scientists out of control, Dr. Strangelove scientists, finding ways to make more money and make big careers. It wasn't just about that. That became evident to me as Billy Hayes led me through one technology after another, and I realized how organized this was. All the while in the newspapers, as you remember, we may have to geoengineer someday. We've got climate change problems. We've got extreme weather. We've got global warming. The carbons are out of control. All of the litany of misleading theories to keep the American busy on figuring out what was true and what wasn't, as they created all these huge conferences, environmentalist conferences, global warming conferences, climate change conferences, all with the PhDs and big organizations, with NASA, and all of it never mentioning the military piece to this technology. I always felt like the Lone Ranger, except that in my movement, there were some other people doing the same as I was, maybe with a little bit of a different tack on it. But we were all trying to figure out what was behind this assault, because this was not happening because of our cars. This was not happening because the people's technology was producing a terrible weather trend. This was being done by the military-industrial intelligence complex. And it had many levels to it. And it seemed to us more and more, as we took a deeper and deeper look at it, that human beings were one of the primary objectives of study. And so over time, I discovered what is known as the space fence. That's the second book. The second book is Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. And when I say an ionized sky, what I mean is, since HAARP, there has been a lot of effort to, in a way, turn our atmosphere into a mini ionosphere. In other words, ions, electricity, making the atmosphere so electrical that many thousands of millions of wireless operations could go on simultaneously, because there would be a lot of particulate matter in the air, and you need particulates in order to move radio waves, microwaves, any kind of waves. And so the ionization of the atmosphere that followed from all the HAARP experiments has really been the godsend for what was known in the 1980s as the SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, or as people called it, the Star Wars program, because the Star Wars movies started coming out in the late 70s. So it took me a while to realize, oh, yeah, this is the old SDI program that they basically went black with. It sort of disappeared. And now it's back because it didn't work before. It couldn't work before because the atmosphere simply could not sustain many wireless operations that they needed. So that's sort of the direction I was going in with the space fence. And then the space fence, there had been a space fence back then under the SDI program, but it was really small, and it was down right in your neck of the woods across that southern central United States. Was a whole band of radar installations that constituted the space fence. They had big dishes that were pointed at the sky, and you know, and they told us that they were looking for extraterrestrials. They told us they were looking for space debris, same thing as they tell us now regarding the space debris. But the space fence was about much more, much more. And now it is fully operational. And those patents, whereas Raytheon, the second most powerful military contractor in the world, owned all the HAARP patents, Lockheed Martin owns, and it's number one defense contractor, Lockheed Martin owns all the space fence patents. And so I spend the whole book that came out in 2018, it's called Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. I spend the whole book going through how the infrastructure was laid out. And once you begin to read that book and you're going from chapter to chapter and you're seeing, oh, wow, so, okay, so radar installations are involved. Well, that makes sense. It's military. But wait a minute, cell towers are involved too. GWEN towers, ground wave emergency network towers, are involved. Cell phones are involved. NEXRADs are involved, those big golf ball radar installations across the United States, usually near radio stations. Those are involved. WSACs are involved, the wet surface air cooling technique from nuclear and industrial stacks that produce lots of water vapor. They're involved. And you suddenly realize that all of this equipment here on Earth is all calibrated to work together as one large machine. And that has to do with what's being laid in the upper atmosphere, not just in our atmosphere, because our jets are still laying those trails. And those trails are loaded with nanoparticles of heavy metals that we're all sucking in. And those nanoscale, a nano is equal to 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter. That nanoscale particle, of which there are trillions and trillions and trillions, we're breathing in. And it's going straight to our brain, because it can easily slide through the blood-brain barrier. And meanwhile, Alzheimer's at one end of life and autism at the other are just booming, growing in leaps and bounds. And that doesn't seem to matter to those who are committed to this technology that is basically, as has basically turned our atmosphere into an ionosphere. And all of this in service to what Catherine Austin Fitz, the investment analyst, calls the secret space program. And that's the key to understanding how this could be done to us, how the quality of natural life could be so consumed by heavy metals, nano sensors. I mean, we've seen articles, they're dropping trillions of sensors in the upper atmosphere to send back data about temperature, density, chemical composition, etc. up there. But a lot of them don't stay up there. They come down here and we breathe those in too. Then there are the tiny computers, the microprocessors. They're so tiny. They're so on a nano scale, you can't even imagine. They're transceivers. They're transmitting and receiving, and somebody is taking up all that data that is not just around us, but is inside us. And this is how far I've come in 9 years. This is the big thing for me now. You know, I spent a lot of time on the weather. I spent a lot of time on turning weather into a weapon and using it for political gain, political control over other nations. Spent a lot of time on figuring out how the ionosphere and our atmosphere are connected and what that entails for us, what it entails for us to live in an electrified atmosphere filled with radio and microwaves, what it means for our brain development, what it means for our children, what it means for our evolution. And so the biggest thing I've arrived at now is the nanotechnology aspect of it that seems to me to be very purposeful, that we are the host not just of Morgellons, but other pathogens, other fungi from the upper atmosphere, other viruses, other bacteria from the upper atmosphere. And we are the guinea pigs to see how all this goes, you know, in a wireless, absolutely an atmosphere thick with a type of non-ionized radiation that is usually ELF, extra low frequency, which might make some people feel safe that it's not like ionized radiation, where, you know, you have, and it's not even high-powered microwaves for the most part, but it is around us and in us, and it can be used by the infrastructure of the space fence on Earth and in the upper atmosphere with the satellites and the heavy metal composition up there. It can be used to control us and even possibly transform us into a transhumanist cyborg. So all of this fits together. And when I see other movements, like the anti-vaccination movement, the anti-GMO movement, the anti-big pharma movement, all of these things are very, very important. And I think you can see now, Chris, they're connected to this.
Definitely.
It's all connected.
Oh, it's definitely all connected. And there's so many terrifying elements to these operations. But you had mentioned something in the very beginning that I'd like to get your thoughts on. The Notre Dame fire. It's such a huge event already that's going to have an effect on the world for, you know, forever now. What are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, of course, my first thought was I wanted to weep because I had what used to be known as a classical education back east. I had a very good education because in my generation, I'm 71, I was able to go to private and public schools where I was taught Greek mythology, the Renaissance, the Reformation, you know, all the European stuff that now is, ooh, that's all white man stuff. Get rid of it. It's not valuable. All of the things that were beginning to civilize the passions and the instincts of the human being were wrapped up in that European package. It could have come from anywhere. Does it matter? Well, you know, the powers that be that now run things are so savage that to them it matters, and they don't want it for the people. They want a slave class. They want an obedient slave class that loves its toys like cell phones. I mean, Chris, I don't own a cell phone. Why would I want to own a military weapon that's going to be used against me and those around me? Why would I do that?
I wish I could say the same.
Well, it's a matter of perspective, isn't it? So when I saw the Notre Dame thing happen, oh, I felt it was a big statement. And, oh, a little fire started on the roof? I don't think so. Oh, no. No, no, not Notre Dame. That is a symbol of everything they want to take down. And when I say they, I'm talking about those savage people. A lot of them are corporate CEOs. A lot of them are on corporate boards. A lot of them are just the almighty dollar. And a lot of them are esotericists. You know, I've studied Rudolf Steiner for years. A lot of people know that. I'm so indebted to Rudolf Steiner for teaching me how to really think. But if we have esotericists also at the top, not just the greedy bastards that want more power, more money, and love to dominate people because they're all sociopaths. They want something more. They want to be as gods on the earth, as gods that decide, oh, this is human and this is machine, but now we're going to have something in the middle too. We're going to have a cyborg, we're going to have an androgyne, whatever you want to call it. It's too captivating. It's too, there's too many perks that can come from what is now called, and it will change, it will go through all sorts of names, but now it's called the BCI or BMI, the brain-computer interface, the brain-machine interface. And this idea of the singularity, the Singularity University in Palo Alto in Silicon Valley is right next to Facebook and Google. It's buddies. So we're being prepped. And by torching Notre Dame, it's a statement. How was it torched? Well, I would say take a good look at Paradise, California. And I thoroughly examined that along with some other activists in the movement.
Right. I've had Deborah Tavares on.
Yes. Yes. And Jamie Lee of aplaintruth.info has about 100 videos on that paradise. So what I'm looking at as a possibility, I'm never very attached to my theories because I have quite a backlog now of understanding of how all this works on a technical aspect as well as on a organizational aspect, what organizations might be involved in something like this. And I don't know if it was a CGI, but I was before we hooked up on the internet, I was looking at a post, a YouTube post of a TR-3B over Chartres. So, wow, okay. So a TR-3B can, it's a sort of interstellar, it can be in space and it can be here.
It was one of the earlier secret space sort of crafts, right?
Yeah, one of the triangular crafts. The other one, which was larger, was the Aurora. But the TR-3B, anyway, somebody appears to have caught a TR-3B uncamouflaging and then camouflaging as the flames quickened in Chartres. So is that possible? Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's very possible. So let's keep our eyes open. But as far as that being some sort of little roof fire that, gee whiz, they may even find some bum that they're gonna blame it on, no way. No way would that happen on the scale of news that that Notre Dame deserves. So I see it as a direct slap in the face of Western civilization. Does that mean that I think some Eastern group did it or Middle Eastern group? No, not at all. We have our own enemies that are doing very well for themselves. So my first thoughts are always our own. And that would include the Satanists, of which there are many in the American military, thanks to General Michael A. Aquino and the entire satanic movement in the military going back to the 80s. I've done a great deal of research on that, and I'm satisfied that it's accurate. So there's a lot of things that are buried in our culture that are not conscious and not intentional, along with a phalanx of very smart, clever men and women who have plans for the future of humanity and the future of civilization itself. So all of this is about how I think the burning of Notre Dame also has to do with a certain era is over, folks. It's over. And I may feel tearful about it and the loss of civilization in favor of a savagery that is, in my mind, unparalleled in history. And I'm a historian by trade. I may feel sad about that, but I am not going to bury myself in nostalgia. I'm known by many people as girding up my loins. This is my watch. I chose to be here now. This is my life. These are great themes that are being played out before me. And I have to be absolutely dedicated to garnering the most accurate picture I can at multiple levels, because I am one of those few people who has developed at multiple levels. And so that I can present an accurate picture to those who seek to read my books, listen to me on radio talk shows, and soon, in 2 weeks, I'm due in Santa Fe, New Mexico, to speak with Clifford Carnicum at a conference. I have to keep striving for a clear picture. I don't need the New York Times and Washington Post to tell me their lies and tell me what's going on, because they're not going to. I gave up on all that in the 60s. I've been on my own for many years, and have really, there's a way you can know the truth if you have the patience to do the research and you have an understanding of how truth reveals itself, because there's many old sayings, the truth will out, and nothing remains hidden, everything will be seen. These are all true, but how you do it in a culture that's pummeling you with lies and deception and entertainment and distraction and all these things. You have to develop a strength of will and an understanding of, to some degree, of why you're even here. What are you, an accident? I don't think so.
Right. I agree 100%.
Now, I think a lot of people have come to be here for this struggle that's going on right now. Don't you?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm starting to believe the theory that, we do choose to come back here for particular reasons.
Yes, always. Now, yeah, I think I was 8 years old when I first realized. Of course, I was a child. I didn't know quite what I had realized, but I realized that I had known the man that wrote something I read in a book that was written 2,500 years ago.
Wow.
I knew him. And it was like, then I, in a typical 8-year-old fashion, then I kind of, oh, well, okay. Yeah, and then I went on my way. Only years later did I go, wait a minute, what was that about? And so we are here with purpose, and everything around us, this is where the Hindu idea of Maya and illusion comes in. Everything around us seems to be calling for our attention. Look here, look there, look here, look there. Or maybe you'll make some mess that will take you years to work your way out of. There's so many ways to lose your way on why you came here. And that's the beauty of this strange earth journey. And it's also kind of scary, because it takes a long time for us to gird up our loins and then to have a clear perspective on what's going on levels that seem to be unattainable to us. Like, I'm not in Washington, D.C. There was actually a time in my life when I could have been in Washington, D.C., but I chose another path. Do we need to be where the crime is committed in order to know what the crime is and the criminal who perpetrated it? Well, you know, the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, which I adore, says no. No, you just need to be able to think and observe. And that's exactly true. That is exactly what I have learned over these years.
Yeah. And
I love it.
That's very well said and very true. And, you know, Alana, one of the things that we're having to deal with that, you know, they're rolling this out no matter what. They're rolling out 5G. And, you know, there's very little we can do to kind of combat this. I would like to talk about that later, what we can do on our own. But for now, give us your thoughts on 5G and the possibilities that they could integrate some sort of AI to maybe affect us in a way of mind control.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. But the 5G, as I say in Under an Ionized Sky, the 5G is what I call the linchpin. This millimeter wave technology will be very helpful in that it's certainly breaking down our immune system. I think that by listening to Dr. Paul, people would learn a great deal about the calcium ion problem that the millimeter wave produces in us. And that in itself, see, if you were going to make a cyborg or an androgene and or a transhuman of some sort, you would want to break down their immune system first, it seems to me. The immune system is often overlooked by people as being important, but try having a life without a healthy immune system, which I think a lot of people are doing right now. That's why the doctors, the medical industry, and big pharma are just making a fortune off of illness. And of course, they're not going to make a fortune off of health. So it's all a real scam. And, you know, I haven't been to a doctor since I was 13. I studied Chinese medicine for 6 years and learned how to do it. And it's worked much better because Chinese medicine is much older and wiser than Western allopathic medicine. But if you wanted to undermine an immune system, okay, first you'd pummel people through the environment, like pollution has done, like radiation has done from the all the different tests that were done in the 50s, the 40s and 50s in America, and the downwinders having suffered and generations suffering. And then, you know, you might want to use wireless because certainly our system, though we respond to electromagnetics and we have certain aspects of our system are electromagnetic to some degree, electromagnetism is really antithetical to our organism. And so we're caught in this catch-22 of needing the very thing for our civilization that is destroying us. But with the 5G, we're coming into a whole other level. It's not just a matter of undermining the immune system through the calcium ion channels. It's actually that this 5G millimeter wave thing will get down to the very genetic level, and that is scary enough. It'll shred the mitochondria that is supposed to protect us, our genetics, and then it's possible, according to Anthony Patch, who's a friend of mine. He's my go-to CERN man, but he believes that another purpose of the 5G is that they want to implement another strand to our DNA, a third strand, very possible. So they're working on that. But isn't it fascinating that they're not going to need to drag you and your friends or your relatives into a clinic to do all this? They're going to use the environment. And they're going to use it as they're using 5G. They're going to sell you the product with not nearly the information you need to make a reasonable decision. And then the final coup de grace of the 5G for me is the nanoparticles that I was discussing earlier, that we now have these heavy metals, which are highly conductive. So we're basically electromagnetic towers ourselves. And then there are the nanopathogens like Morgellons. Morgellons is certainly not the only one. And then you have the sensors, the microprocessors, and all the other the C60, the carbon tubes, the fullerenes, all of the nanotech that never went through Congress other than to be rubber stamped, never was tested on a large scale before being released in the early 2000s. So we have all this gear in us, and it is gear. It is all transceiver. It's all transmitting and receiving. It's all capable of that. So when you say mind control, it's on a scale that is, imagine that you have nanobots in you that can be programmed from afar. And the program they decided on is that, you know, you're going to be a slave and think it's fantastic. And your health is going to be in the hands of vaccinators and big pharma and the medical industry. And you're going to think that's great.
Yeah, it seems they're trying to suppress everything that's human and completely suppress our consciousness to where we're almost robotic.
Well, that's exactly the term that comes to me when I encounter young people staring at their phones.
Yes, definitely.
There is a robotic element that is already in place. And I do want to warn your listeners that it sounds like I'm talking about the future, but it's already started and it's just getting going now. But remember, that cell phone can be pulsed, whether it's on or off. It does not matter. It's always on. It can be pulsed with frequencies that alter your mood and your thoughts, just as it's used with sleepers who are involved in false flag events of killing. This is a dangerous instrument, and it's something to be aware of. I'm not here to fearmonger. It's something that you need to really take seriously as a piece of technology. And I'm recommending to people, you can't turn it off, okay? You can't turn it off. And now you can't even take the battery out anymore, unless you have one of the oldies, which won't be allowed much longer. So you could put it in your car at night, but to get it as far away from where you sleep as possible, to sleep with your head to the north or east, to unplug everything possible, including your router at night when you sleep. You know, a lot of people are having sleep problems. I can't believe they haven't figured out why. It's really easy. And if you live in a neighborhood like I do, you've got to take your neighbors into account in this. They're not turning their routers off, probably.
Right.
So what wall are you sleeping on? You know, turn your bed a little bit, see if that does anything. In other words, let's start thinking on our feet. Let's start thinking for ourselves instead of waiting for a panacea to come along that's going to make everything okay. It's not coming. And neither is Martin Luther King. We're on our own now. And it's time for us to grow up, get over our video games and our super fast download of movies, and get with the picture here of what we're really fighting for here. We're fighting for the future of humanity.
Well, that brings me to, where do you think that we're headed in the next 10, even 5 years, and what can we do individually to try and combat this?
Well, you know, it always boils down for me to the fact that, I don't know how your life is going, Chris, but my life has been relatively hard. There have been difficulties that some are self-imposed and self-created, but some I just sort of inherited along with my family, my culture, my time. And I always saw it as my job was not to moan and groan and wring my hands, but to really take it on and figure out how it could serve me. Because I think that everything here can serve a very meaningful life, despite the dangers. I mean, imagine living in Serbia now. You know, every day is dangerous. We don't have that level here. We have another level that's more insidious, less visible. We're going to have to really learn this technology. We're going to have to learn the difference between megahertz and gigahertz. I'm going to have to look at our walls and say, okay, there's 60 hertz running through these walls. That can be activated if anyone wants to target me. They can use the energy off of my own 60 hertz that I use for my lights. We need to learn this technology. That's the very first thing. And then we can talk about, I won't talk about stopping this. That's not going to happen. It may stop itself by some great cataclysm. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But until we do the work of really educating ourselves and not waiting for schools to do it, PhD programs to do it. I mean, PhDs, most of them that I know, and I know several, they don't know anything about what I know because they've been programmed, conditioned to see things in a certain light.
Yeah, and this just goes so deep. You know, most people are afraid to even go near the topic, and that's the saddest part.
Well, I don't know, you know, if fear works out for people, have at it. But I've never been impressed by fear.
Right. Yeah.
I don't do fear. That's what I always say. I don't do fear. Even if I'm assaulted, I don't do fear. This is my life. It is my life. And it is a meaningful life. And I will continue to keep it meaningful. You know, people can say, oh, the world's falling apart and, oh, all these terrible things. Yeah, but you're still here. You're still here. You've probably got some food. You've probably got a roof over your head, unlike many people now. Really look at what you still have as a personal life and take care of it, but not at the expense of your responsibility to the public. This is where Americans have really failed big time. I mean, I have been yelling about stuff since the 60s. I have not stopped. And most people are just so self-satisfied, so burrowing into their little comfy, cozy, convenient American lifestyle that they don't understand. You have a big opportunity here to be a bigger person than that. Why aren't you taking the opportunity? But because it's dangerous? Well, lucky you that you would find out what it means to be on a battlefield without having to go to war against some some defenseless third world country. You could actually see that we are on a battlefield right now. And the first step has to be your own knowledge. I always say at the end of a talk, and I always sign my books for people, with knowledge is power. Scientia est potentia. And the bad guys know that too. And that's why they like you to stay ignorant. They want you downloading those movies and zoning out into the alpha land. They don't want you taking hold of knowledge and turning it into power. That's what they do.
And they definitely don't want the younger generations to put down that cell phone and start to turn it all around that way.
No, they don't. They want you to get excited over the new model coming out. It's all hypnotic. It's all addictive. And if you're smart, whoever's listening, you'll get out of it so that you can have a real life. And I'm old, and I'm from another era. I was lucky enough to live in the 60s generation. We were a very unique, unusual generation for all the bad-mouthing people do of the 60s generation. Yeah, we didn't save America, did we? Well, we were 21. Excuse me. We were kids. And COINTELPRO from the FBI and CIA, domestic CIA, they came at us with everything they had. Bad drugs, LSD, you name it. They did it to us. They killed the figures we loved. They murdered them so that we would be sad and lost and give up. We've been through it, you know, and I am grateful that I cut my teeth on the 60s generation, because I'm still going, and I'm going to continue going until I drop dead. This is your life. And, you know, I just cannot put a value on it. It's so great to be an individual, to have the opportunity to become a truly strong, insightful individual. You still have that, but once that 5G starts going, and you've got your little cell phone, and you've got all those nanobots swimming around in your brain, I don't know, it could be all bets are off for you, but not for me, because I've spent years developing my consciousness to be strong, integritous, unflinching, working for the good. Please join me in this. I say that to everyone. Please join me. This is exciting. I can't believe I am so fortunate to live in an era in which so many things now are in doubt, including the future. I do not get depressed over that. This is a fight worth fighting. This is not a Vietnam or an Iraqi war. This is a real fight. And you know, I appreciate youth and how misled it has been, but is that unusual? They always target youth because that's the future. So almost every parent who didn't prepare their kid for that, why didn't you prepare them for the fact that they would be targeted by the powers that be? Why didn't you prepare them better instead of just preparing them to have big careers, make a lot of money, go to college, be safe? Now, this is something different now. And this is how I'm talking now, Chris. I used to be really just stick with the subject, but now that I realize this subject is all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
I really want to make appeals to people, because it's not depressing. This is how a life is. You're born into a time in which great themes are moving, and if you're really fortunate, you're going to get a really interesting life, a really time of interesting themes. And here we are: technology, technocracy, corporatocracy. Democracy? No, that's gone, folks. That is gone. Don't even spend 5 minutes on it. Constitution? Great document. We're not living by it. We haven't been for years. But we are involved in an epic struggle for the future of humanity and the future of the Earth. Yes. Yes. So that's probably all I have to say on that. Did you want more on how to take care of yourself?
Well, if you could, yeah, we can do another few minutes if you want to just give us a little bit on how we can take care of ourselves before you head out.
Yes, because that's the important thing. Keep that immune system going well. Okay, so I've been macrobiotic my whole life since I was 21. That means that I eat a lot of grains, vegetables, miso, seeds, nuts, a little bit of fish, a little bit of chicken, and no sugar, no dairy, no beef kind of diet. That has worked for me. I'm not saying everybody should do that diet. No, I'm just telling you what worked for me. And I'm talking no doctors and nothing hurts. I'm 71, nothing. Well, my dislocated shoulder hurts right now, but I don't want to go into that and how that happened. Okay. So that's one thing, diet, lifestyle. What's your lifestyle? Gonna have to think about that one, because there may be some things in it you already know probably you should give up if you're going to become strong and aware of what's going on around you. So lifestyle has to be looked at. Third, we in the anti-geoengineering movement, a lot of us are exploring different options to get the nanoparticles out of us. This is really, really important, because every day you're breathing in trillions and trillions of nanoparticles. Even when you go to a good store and you buy some new clothes, nanoparticles all over them. Cosmetics, nanoparticles. Foods in the grocery store, packaged foods that have some sort of thick consistency, nanoparticles. They don't have to be listed. You are intaking a lot of nanoparticles, and you don't want to be doing that. At least you want to develop a habit in your life that will limit them and hopefully get them out of you. The guy who's studying that to the highest degree, in my opinion, is Tony Pantelleresco. That's Pantelleresco. Tony is Canadian, and he's studying, he has an engineering background. He's studying how you get, for one, the heavy metals out. That's really crucial, given the Alzheimer's thing. So Tony is really looking at magnetism and using magnetism to our advantage. All of these solutions that we're looking into, are almost all of them, are very low tech, and they deserve another look. It's a very cool adventure to give them a try, because we've been raised so technologically that we really don't know much about the real laws of physics and low-tech solutions that are close at hand and not expensive. So that's very important as well. I already went through the sleep regime, and I already told you about the cell phone. So that's pretty much what I'm doing. I'm taking baths. Tony recommended a bath. I take it once a week. It's with Epsom salt, sea salt, and borax. The borax will help to open your skin. You're not aware of it, but you have a polymer. You probably have a polymer covering on your skin that you haven't even noticed, which locks your pores, and they need to be opened if you're going to be able to get a mass exodus of nanoparticles. So when I take the bath, I'm not looking for little guys swimming around on top of the bath, because we're talking nanoscale. So in a way, I'd need an electroscope in order to really see how successful I'm being. But I pretty much just go with the bath, because so many people have felt so much better who are really sick. And I pay close attention to what they're telling me, because our medical industry is not going to tell us anything about this. Most of the doctors don't know anything, and others among the doctors are already compromised. So that's about it. And then the last part would be your consciousness. And if it sounds hopeless or whatever, you know, we've never really tried consciousness as something that is powerful. We've all heard the maxim, where two or three are gathered in my name, this idea that if you come together with people of like mind and you work together, you build a power that is more than any one of you on your own. And in fact, more than threefold. It's more like a logarithmic threefoldness. So I highly recommend that you really think about what consciousness is. If you're taking drugs, I suggest you stop and really take hold of life itself and figure out how your consciousness interweaves with it through laws like the law of synchronicity, the law of correspondence. All of these things are old school, but they're still working. They're still happening. And it's an exciting discovery to really look into things from another perspective.
Very well said. That's a perfect note to end on. Alana, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was some fantastic information, very critical information for people to know. And I'm going to definitely have to have you back on again.
All right. All right, Chris, maybe my shoulder will be better by then.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You have a very good night.
Thank you.